Trip Live Radio presents The Kevin Gorman Show, talking Pittsburgh sports with a focus on high school and college sports, plus all the latest recruiting news. Now, here's your host, Trip columnist Kevin Gorman, Trip Total Media. See what's next.
Happy Friday, everyone. It's a WPIL quarterfinals weekend and a lot of exciting times here in Western Pennsylvania. A lot of rematches in the WPIL playoffs, most notably the games of the week in Pittsburgh and Greensburg. Central Catholic North Allegheny is one. Penn Trafford, McKee Sports is another. Chris Harlan and Paul Schofield will join us to talk about those two games and more. But let's start with a little controversy. Over in the Mon Valley, Steel Valley High School, a little pocket of Pittsburgh right on the city border, right at Homestead in Munhall, not far from where I grew up in Baldwin. A school district that has created a quite the stir here this week. They did it all really last fall, last basketball season, last spring, and now again this fall, right when they should be really kind of focusing on the Ironmen having a chance to make the WPL playoffs semifinal round for the first time since 1991, back when Charlie Batch was playing for Steel Valley. Instead, we have the controversy of Steel Valley firing Drew Schifino 5 days before basketball season begins. And Drew Schifino, some people, you know, you can take your sides on all of this. Drew Schifino is a guy who boycotted Steel Valley's WPL basketball playoff game last year in protest to his top player, Dominique Keys, being ruled ineligible just hours before the tip-off. This story goes back a long way, and Schifino's protest did not get him fired, and he said it was because he had the support of the school board, a board that now has turned on him, and with a 5-0 vote on Wednesday, dismissed him as its coach. Just like it had dismissed Sean McAllister as the coach last October, November, just weeks before the basketball season was to begin, weeks before a team that he had long waited for was ready to start the season, a team that had a 6'11" center, a 6'7" forward, a 6'6" freshman backup center. It had a 6'3" shooting guard who was a three-sport athlete, one of the WPL's top athletes, and Brandon Donovan. It had his own son at point guard, and it had a lot of other talented athletes, a team that should have been a WPL championship contender, and instead went from a team that had a chance to be dominant into one that became very dysfunctional, much like its own school board. Much like its own school district, a district that has really started to embarrass itself. Once was one of the pride of the Mon Valley. In the 80s, won 3 WPL championships, one under George Novak, 2 under Jack Guerin, back-to-back championships in the late 80s. Has produced some great athletes. And really, you know, in a steel town, kind of exemplified what Iron Men was all about, playing tough, playing hard, being physical. And I'm just kind of, having known everybody involved, I'm kind of embarrassed for Steel Valley, that what they've become. Because this is really, it shouldn't just be about Drew Schifino, a guy who has taken to Twitter and aired all of the dirty laundry. Drew Schifino is nothing but a pawn in a political game. And that political game started between the Steel Valley School Board, its football coach, and its basketball coach, who's also the athletic director, Sean McAllister. And it has gotten to the point where it's no longer about the kids, and that's the real shame of this. It's supposed to be always about the kids. It's supposed to be about their 4 years in high school and making them the most memorable 4 years of high school that anyone could ever remember. It's about trying to win championships, not trying to keep your job at all costs. And I think it's a shame that a district that without a benefactor, a millionaire, and Bill Campbell, a guy who has done a lot to keep that school district alive, they might be like many other Mon Valley schools, struggling for survival. Instead, they're a district squabbling over backroom politics. And it's really pathetic. I think it's really pathetic that Steel Valley has devolved into this. And, you know, Sean McAllister likely will get his basketball job back, a job he probably should have never lost in the first place. But you know what? Sean McAllister was also the athletic director of the school district and the president of the teachers union at a time when the union was fighting for a new contract. the school board made an example of, out of him as part of his negotiating ploy. And you can connect all these dots, and it's sad to do that. And it, and I don't want to point fingers at one person or another. It's a collective effort by everyone in the Steel Valley School District, everyone on the school board, everyone involved in the administration, that the district is in the place that it is right now, which is in the news for all the wrong reasons. And I think that's a real shame. I think it's a real shame that I have to come on here because people want me to write stories about this or about that with their side of the story. And I think the whole story is disgusting. Drew Schifino's a guy who probably should have never taken that job. There has been a thing going on here the last couple years where school districts, because of their board, because of politics, have opened jobs on people, and people being opportunistic have gone after those jobs. Drew Schifino being one of them. He's a guy who took a job that most coaches didn't want because there's a fraternity of coaching where when one of your coaches has done wrong, everybody else stays away out of respect. Drew Schifino didn't do that. He was opportunistic. He knew a lot of these players from AU basketball, from personal training, and he wanted to coach a good team and had thought he had a chance to win a WPL championship. No, he had no idea that he was walking into the political battle that he was, and he was nothing but a pawn in that political battle between Sean McAllister, football coach Rodney Steele, and the school board, none of whom can seem to get along, even though Rodney Steele's wife, Colleen Steele, is on the school board. I think she's actually the president of the school board. So it's a mess over there. But Drew Schifino, you know, is kind of being cast as one of the villains in this at first glance, and now is kind of being cast as the victim at second glance, and I don't really believe he's either. I don't think... you know, this is something that I don't think Sean McAllister should be cast as the villain, even though he's probably done some things that could be considered underhanded, if true. At the same time, Sean McAllister should have never lost his coaching job based on merit. It was based on politics that he lost his coaching job. The thing that gets me, and this isn't just about the Steel Valley School Board, but about any school board, is that people who have neither the qualifications to run an administration for academics or an administration for athletics, because of the way this society works here where we vote for our school boards, they run for voting and are elected to the school board, and they are placed over top of the administrators and athletic administrators and the academic administrators who are qualified. That's crazy. It's actually the definition of insane, if you ask me. Let's move on. I think it's better for everyone if Steel Valley kind of just goes back to its norm, which is pure dysfunction, but kind of stays out of the headlines while doing so, unless it's for all the right reasons. If the Steel Valley Ironmen are able to win this playoff game against Beaver Falls, that could be a big moment for Steel Valley, but it doesn't really quell any of the controversy that's occurred here. But I think it's an exciting time. You know, the closer we get to the cold weather, a lot of people kind of yearn for summer again. I think in terms of football season, the colder it gets, the closer you are to the championship events. You know, here we are one more round closer to the highway to Hines, as people like to call it. This may be the last WPL playoffs as we know it with a four classification bracket. This may be the last playoffs as we know it with four championship games at Hines Field all on one day, those games being televised by Root Sports. This may be the last as we know it of a lot of things in Western Pennsylvania. West Shamokin is leaving the WPIL to join the Heritage Conference. Wilkinsburg is going to close its doors at the end of the school year. It played its final game just a couple weeks ago at Graham Field, a historic field where they've played for more than 100 years. A lot of things are changing in Western Pennsylvania. A lot of people are resisting that change, but change is coming, just like winter's coming, and there's not much you can do to stop it. But I think, you know, the big thing is you get a chance to embrace the excitement of what's going on right now. So, as I mentioned, we're going to have Paul Schofield will be joining us. Chris Harnell will be joining us talking about the games of the week. Also, we're going to have we're here from Avonworth head coach Duke Joncor and his quarterback Zach Chandler, who has had a record-setting season. We'll hear from them. They're part of tonight's WPXI Skylight Spotlight on the Channel 11 News, also the subject of my column for tomorrow's editions, and a big part of today's Kevin Gorman Show on Triple Live Radio. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Paul Schofield to talk about that Penn Trafford-McKeesport game. You're listening to the Kevin Gorman Show on Triple Live Radio.
In the nation, we make wise investment choices. We work hard for our money. We want our money to work even harder for us. At Nationwide, we have products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. That's 412-678-8868 to find out if your money could be working harder for you. Auto, home, life, bundle up, and save up to 25% off. Nationwide has more discounts on home insurance, so you can save more money. Combine your auto, home, and life policies, and you could save up to 25% off. Plus, you'll get our famous On Your Side service. To learn more about combining your policies, call Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. Now, back to the Kevin Gorman Show on Trib Live Radio.
Well, it's time to focus on football. The WPL quarterfinals are here, and three rematches out of four quarterfinal games in WPL Quad A. One of them, Penn Trafford, McKeesport. The first meeting was at McKeesport, or at Penn Trafford. This one is at Gateway, kind of a middle ground for these two schools. Conference rivals, Penn Trafford now 10-0, McKeesport 9-1. It's only loss that game to Penn Trafford. And Paul Schofield's here to talk about it. Hey, Paul, thanks for joining us on the Kevin Gorman Show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
No problem, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, we were both at that game, 21-7. Victory for Penn Trafford on September 18th. I guess that's week three of the season. But that one wasn't even as close as the score indicated.
Well, it was a little close early, and then Penn Trafford, you know, they scored a defensive touchdown to go up 7-0, I think. Then they went up 14-0 on a touchdown pass to Timmy Vecchio. And then McKeesport probably had their best offensive drive of the game, and Mark Cromarty scored to make it 14-7. But right before halftime, Brett LaFoon and Timmy Vecchio hooked up on a long pass for another touchdown. That kind of maybe took the wind out of McKeesport's sails. It was 21-7. Second half, the Warriors had two touchdowns. Could have easily scored two more touchdowns. Vecchio returned the second half kickoff for a touchdown, but there was a penalty. And then later in the third quarter, Jonah Lisbon, the Penn Trafford running back, who rushed for 125 yards, he took a pass from LaFoon, and as he got to the goal line, he dove, and he got sandwiched by two McKeesport players and fumbled the ball. And you got to credit the two McKeesport players for making the, you know, not giving up on the play and making the defensive stop. And then late, in the fourth quarter, with about 10 and a half minutes left, McKeesport needed to stop, and they never got the ball back. Penn Trafford just ran the clock out on them, and that was a pretty impressive way to end the football game.
Yeah, so, I mean, you had Vecchio had one touchdown call back on a kick return, and Lisbon fumbled at the one-yard line. So that could it could have been 35-7, which would have looked like a big-time blowout. But like you said, you have to give McKeesport credit. One was a penalty, so that doesn't really count as a touchdown. The other one, the defense made a big stop. But I think the question here is how much – you know, Penn Trafford has been dominant from day one. How much better is McKeesport since that game?
I think they've gotten really, you know, a lot better. And people that I don't tend to forget, they opened up the season with scrimmages against Central Catholic and Woodland Hills. They were really tested. And then in that game against Penn Trafford, their starting quarterback, Tamar's, Javon Shear, got hurt. And then they had to go with last year's quarterback, Tymir Sutton. And Sutton was just coming back from an injury, and he wasn't in game performance shape, and he cramped up. So they ended up going with their third-string quarterback. So that kind of hurt their offense. But since then, they, you know, they've just dominated everybody they played. Granted, I don't think the conference was, you know, other than PT and other than McKeesport, all that strong, as strong as those two teams. But, you know, they dominate everybody. I mean, both teams are coming in averaging beating opponents by more than 40 points per game. So, you know, they're right with them. And I think it's, you know, with this win today, and I don't know if the win's going to die down or not, but that could affect the passing game for Penn Trafford. But, of course, we know McKeesport doesn't throw the ball. I mean, 15 times all year.
That's the crazy thing about it is two things. I want to back up a little bit here. McKeesport, the last two games, has beaten teams by a combined 110-0. And those are both playoff teams. Kiski Area, they beat in the season finale 62-0. Kiski Area comes back a week later and takes Bethel Park to the wire in a 34-26 loss in round one. That's a Kiski Area team that went 0-9 the year before, finishes 5-5 this year. Seneca Valley, a team that missed the playoffs a year ago, and gave North Allegheny and Pine Richland all they could handle. McKeesport beats Seneca Valley 48-0 last week. That's a Seneca Valley team that finished 5-5. So we're talking about 2 5-5 teams, but there's a considerable gap between McKeesport and just average teams. So they've shown that they have a chance to be dominant. I think their statistics are even misleading. Khalid Hudson, just over 1,100 yards and 24 touchdowns rushing. But as I noticed, I noticed in our capsule today, they have five players with 200 or six players who have rushed for 200 yards or more this season. So he's by far, I mean, barely, he's by no means the lone horse in that backfield.
No, not at all. And, you know, I think you look at what McKeesport does, you know, and a flex zone offense is very tough to stop. You know, and George Smith, you got to really commend George Smith. He left that program for a couple of years, and you know, it didn't take him long to get that program back running at full tilt again, just like all the McKeesport people remember. And you got to remember, both of these teams reached the semifinals last year, you know, but they lost. I mean, Central Catholic beat Penn Trafford, and was it Woodland Hills beat McKeesport?
No, Pine Richland.
Or Pine Richland beat them. So, I mean, and when the pairings came out, I was really shocked that the WPL football committee ranked McKeesport seventh. I mean, that was, and got a rematch with this. I mean, McKeesport's, I think, probably one of the top four teams in the WPIL.
Yeah, and really McKeesport was looked down upon because they lost to Penn Trafford, which was a team that went undefeated. So, you know, it was tough. There were a bunch of teams with one loss, and obviously the WPIL Football Steering Committee looked favorably upon the Quad North schools, but I think they did so to some extent overlooking the second-place teams in both the Quad East and Quad Central, being Mount Lebanon and McKeesport, who got the 6 and 7 seeds instead of one of the top 5 seeds. So, you know, somebody benefits there. The funny thing is the Central Catholic, which had earned the highest seed out of the Quad North, actually got the lowest seed. They got the 5. Pine Richland,
right.
Pine Richland, because it was the defending champion, got the 3, and North Allegheny got the 4 because North Allegheny beat Central. But really, none of it made sense. Had they gone in the correct order, Central Catholic should have been the highest seed, which would have been 3, Pine Richland 4, and North Allegheny 5. So I don't necessarily think they got that right. And what they did, though, was they set up for some regular season rematches, and that will be interesting to see how much different this game is than the one in Week 3. As you mentioned, the win could be a factor for Penn Trafford. I think that helps that Jonah Lisbon has really come on and been a big-time player for them in recent weeks. And also the lack of a passing game could hurt McKeesport as it did in Week 3 if they get behind. And that's the two things that to me that are the variables in this game.
Yeah, and when I was going over to talk to Greg Botta from Franklin Regional at the pairings meeting, and he goes, "What do you think?" I said, "I think McKeesport really got, you know, in Penn Trafford. I mean, I don't think that's a quarterfinal round game." He goes, and then Zach Kessler, who's on the football committee, said, "Well, you know, McKeesport can't throw." I said, "It doesn't matter." I said, "You know, they scrimmaged Central Catholic, and I know it's a scrimmage in Woodland Hills, but I heard they were very, very well. And if they really kept score, they would have won both scrimmages." You know, obviously, yeah, we know that scrimmages are scrimmages, but still, I mean, that showed you how well McKeesport it was. And one of the factors that the football community looked at was, well, McKeesport can't throw. Well, McKeesport doesn't throw.
No.
You know, they
don't necessarily
they
have
what
to throw.
They do.
Yeah. And I think they also have pound for pound, player for player, I think they have the best in the WPL and Khalid Hudson. I think this guy is a guy that could change the game with one big run, with one big hit, with one big interception, no matter what it is. I mean, last week he was on Root Sports and the game was a 48-0 score, and I said to Craig McConnell, the coordinating producer for their high school, McDonald's high school football games, I said, "Boy, that must have been a tough one, that you could have picked a better game." And he said, Kalik Hudson put on a show and made it worthwhile. He actually hurdled one player, and as soon as he landed on the ground, trucked another. And he said those are the kind of things, you know, that's made for television. So, I mean, Kalik Hudson showed everyone last week on Root Sports, even though it was on tape delay, he showed everyone just what he was all about. I mean, I think this is the guy who is a game changer, and I don't think he got a whole lot of opportunities to be the game changer in the first meeting between these two schools because of, as you mentioned, the quarterback situation, that the offense really wasn't clicking, and so Penn Trafford was able to key in on Kalik Hudson and kind of take him out of the game because the quarterbacks weren't really getting into a rhythm there. Hey, Paul, there was one other game we wanted to talk about, and that was the rematch between Jeanette and Neshanic, also a quarterfinal round game. They met last year's in the same round, and Neshanic knocked them out.
Yeah, they did. It was a close game early. Jeanette actually grabbed an early lead and was going actually in for a second touchdown and fumbled, and the fumble kind of turned things around. And Neshanic actually ended up outscoring them 46-32. I think Jeanette had a key injury in that game to one of their running backs, and there's a chance that they're not going to be at full strength tonight. Kareem Hall, one of their star running backs, a junior, he got hurt second offensive play of the Greensburg Central Catholic game in week 9. He scored on a 60-yard touchdown run, but on the play, Alvin Ross from Central dove and tackled him at the goal line, and he has a severe high ankle sprain, so he missed most of the Central game, and he missed last week against Chartiers Houston. And his availability, you know, they were, you know, uncertain if he was even going to be back for tonight. They were hoping, you know, if they could get to the semifinals and the finals, he might be around. So
who's playing tailback in his absence?
What's that?
Who's playing tailback if Hall's out?
Well, they moved Swade Redmond there, and what they also did was they moved they have a big kid named Jefferson Jones, a fullback, who's a bigger kid. That he ran last week and ran well. But, you know, the one that's going to make them go now is quarterback Giovanni Sanders, and he's really has picked up his game and really played well. And he played well in the game against Clareton that they lost. So, and Jeanette's line's a lot better this year than they were last year. So, but they got to. They still got to tackle Frank Antonucci.
Antuano.
The Neshanic quarter. Yeah,
Antuano, yeah.
What a beast he is.
He's a load, and he's a tough, big, strong kid. He's really been the catalyst for Neshanic all season. But last week, here's the interesting thing. Last week, Neshanic had three pick sixes on defense. One of them, Mason Davidson, was a defensive lineman. So, you know, he said got a tutty for the big boy. But, you know, Mason Davidson, Daniel Welker, and Robert Lindsay all scored on interception returns in that 49-13 victory over Bentworth. And so, you know, this is a team defensively is still pretty tough, and Antuano is a guy who, as a freshman, played defensive tackle. That gives you an idea of how big and strong he is and how much of a load he's to bring down at quarterback. That should be a good game. It'll be interesting to see. I think this Jeanette team is better than people realize. And, you know, they played Clareton tough. It was 26-26. I know they lost something like 54-26. But they had them, you know, tie score late in the third quarter before Clareton just kind of pulled away.
They pulled away, and actually Jeanette was going in for a tying touchdown late in the third quarter. And Cespino caught a long pass and over Lamont Wade, and Wade came back and made a defensive. He knocked the ball out of his hand to cause a fumble at the 10-yard line. So that kind of turned the things around for Clareton's way, and then they tacked on a couple touchdowns in the fourth quarter to make the score a lot more offside.
Yeah, and then Neshanic would go on to lose to Clareton in a great semifinal round game, which should have probably been the championship game had Neshanic been placed on the opposite side of the bracket as Clareton. That could have made for a great final last year. But, I bet Neshanic would have brought a ton of people to Heinz Field too, even though Avonworth did as well. So, you know, the WPL didn't really lose out, but I think that would have made for a better Class A championship game. Hey, Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Looking forward to your coverage.
Problem.
You can follow him at P. Schofield, P-S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D _ Trib on Twitter tonight, and he'll have all the updates as well as we will on the iPreps. Thanks again, Paul. I appreciate having you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. That's Paul Schofield. Follow him on Twitter tonight for the updates from that game. We have Chris Harlan on the line. He's going to join us now to talk about the Trib game of the week, North Allegheny Central Catholic, number 4 and number 5, although you could certainly make an argument that it should have been number 3 versus number 5 the other way around in terms of the seeding. Chris, here's another rematch game, and Central's only defeat against North Allegheny in week 3. And now it came the same way North Allegheny or Central Catholic beat Pine Richland.
Yeah, it was a 24-17 North Allegheny win way back in week 3. And that was a game that Central was up going to the fourth quarter, and NA came through with 2 touchdown runs in the fourth to win it. And it's a game that when you talk to the Central coaches and those guys, they hate to admit it, but they say that it was a game where North Allegheny wore them down. They were actually tired. You know, it was early in the season. You know, they look back, maybe their conditioning wasn't quite there, and some of the guys were worn out by that fourth quarter, and NA really took it to them then. So they say, you know, that's one thing tonight. They hope to see better. They hope this many weeks later, that's something they've focused on. They've changed the way they use their linemen a little bit differently, and hoping that tonight, you know, they can play 4 full quarters, unlike they did in week 3.
Well, not only have they changed their starting defensive line lineup, they've changed the way they run their front and their substitution patterns, right?
Yeah. That's one thing that I was talking to Art Walker, NA's coach, and I said, well, when you see film of week 3 and you look at them now, what's the biggest difference? And he said, right away, you look at their defense, and they were running an even front on the front, and now they go to an odd defensive front. So they're changing the way they scheme up front. And he said, for them, it's easy because they can play man defense behind it with the talent they've got in the secondary. So he said they've got a really good scheme there, but they've switched it, he said. So it's almost like scouting them all over again from week 3 to what they do now. But I asked him that. I said, you know, when you're playing a team again, what do you do? You know, as a coach, you know, they won with a game plan in week 3. Do you stick to that? Do you change it? What do you do? And he said, you know, that's a tough decision. When you look at what they did, he said that for him the big thing is not to confuse his own guys. He said, because you know, he said the two sides are, if you stick to what you did last time, then Central was really prepared because they know exactly what you're going to do. If you change it up, then you're risking, you know, going away from what works for you. So he says there's a balance there between sticking with what you do and trying to add some new wrinkles. But he said, you know, that big thing was you have to make sure and stick with a game plan that still suits what your strengths are. So that's kind of the challenge when you're facing someone again in the same season. Is, you know, have you shown them everything you've got, and you go back to the drawing board and try to come up with new stuff.
Well, another interesting thing is that a lot has changed for North Allegheny since that week 3 game, and for Central at the quarterback position. In week 3, North Allegheny was kind of rotating quarterbacks, and the guy that got the bulk of the snaps, I think, in that game was Riley Truman, the guy who scored, I think it was a 3rd-and-1 at the 17-yard line.
Both of the fourth quarter touchdown runs were by Truman.
It wasn't the 17. I think it was the 28-yard line, 3rd-and-1 the 28-yard line, and it turned a quarterback sneak into a 28-yard touchdown run. So, I mean, they've kind of moved things around between him and Ethan Manza, right?
Yeah, right. And Art said that they've kind of worked on how that has developed. You know, it's something that, as the years gone along, it's something they've embraced and really added to that. So, yeah, they're both different. I've talked to both coaches, and both said, you know, that game, that week 3 game film is almost outdated at this point.
Yeah, it's obsolete only 8 weeks later. It's already obsolete. But Troy Fisher for Central Catholic has grown by leaps and bounds since that game. And he did say on our Monday Night Lights show at the Sports Grill in Cranberry this past Monday, he did say that was the game that was the turning point for him.
Yeah, and I saw him play last week against Upper St. Clair. And for being a sophomore, you've seen a ton of growth out of that kid this year. Really turned into a passer, top 1,000 yards last week. And against Upper St. Clair, he threw 2 touchdowns and ran for 2 more. So he's really become, you know, a real weapon in that Central Catholic offense this year. Where, you know, they got the running game, but adding him in, that really balances out that attack.
Yeah, and I think that was evident against Pine Richland when he went kind of toe-to-toe with Phil Jerkovic, who's the heralded sophomore for the Rams, who already has a half-dozen big-time Division I scholarship offers, that Troy Fisher kind of answered him tit-for-tat and got the last word with that 17- or 18-yard quarterback sneak of his own to win the game. I really think this is one when you look at for all of the skill, I have a feeling this game is going to come down to the same thing it did last game. Whoever wins the battle up front.
Right. I mean, they both have really good offensive lines, and both are proud of their offensive and defensive lines. So I think that's, you're right. I think that's going to be the big difference tonight. And when you get to the fourth quarter, we'll see if one group is able to wear out the other by that time.
Chris, I want to move on to a couple other games with you. Woodland Hills Bethel Park, this is another rematch. They played on September 11th, week two. Woodland Hills won that game 28-23. I think the last couple times that Woodland Hills and Bethel Park have played, the game has been very, very close, and Woodland Hills has won on some type of a kick or punt return or interception return, something that kind of took the ball out of Bethel Park's hands, and that's been the difference. But this should be another great game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they were close last year. They were close this year. I'm, in a way, you know, I don't want to criticize the board, but I don't know why the Duke Trail scheduled so many rematches in the second round, you know, just the way the brackets fell. And they're good. They're good games. But some of these matchups, you know, these coaches really thought they were going to, see them later in the playoffs. They wouldn't have to, in the second round, face a conference team that was a real good, early season matchup. So I know I talked to Art Walker about it, and he said that. You know, he said, we never thought we were going to see Central in the second round, but that's the way it fell. So
yeah, I didn't agree with the whole 3-4-5 Quad North teams being the number one seed being three. Well, it didn't even work out that way, but, with Penn Richland being three, Central being five, and North Allegheny being four, I didn't agree with three teams from one conference getting such high seeds in succession, because I think it skewed the rest of the seedings all the way down from, from the bottom. But, I don't like the idea of how these teams having to play rematches so early on in the playoffs. You know, they do try to avoid them in the first round, but to have to play somebody in the second round, it's not unusual, but I do think it is a little bit unfair because they've already played them once. You kind of want to see a team that you haven't seen before, a team that maybe doesn't already have you figured out a little bit. But you know what? You have to beat the best to be the best, and so I guess there's not really much of a gripe there. But I think that should be a good one. It'll be interesting to see whether Bethel Park can stop the Woodland Hills backfield duo of Miles Sanders and Joel Shaw, because those two have been dynamic.
Yeah, they have. And that's been, early in the year we saw that. That was our cover story way back at the beginning of the season, was about the teams that share the ball in the backfield. And that tandem way back then, I talked to Miles Sanders, and he said going into the year that he was hoping that both guys could be 1,000-yard backs. And that happened. I mean, they're both over 1,000 at this point. He missed a couple games, and that let Shaw really go crazy a few times. That backfield has turned into everything you expected, and Levi Mussini has really had a good year for Bethel. So,
yeah, he is.
It's going to be a good game.
He has 1,500-plus yards, 18 touchdowns, came up with a 4-touchdown performance last week against Kiski area. I think he's got some really good weapons at his disposal, too, with he has, Teron Murphy in the backfield, Charlie Davis at wideout, and the big tight end, Jake Dixon. So, I mean, there's some ammunition for Levi Matheny. And interestingly enough, I did a column on him and his father last week about how they kind of know the end is near here, and whether that end, is against West Woodland Hills, or if it's at Heinz Field or Hershey, we don't know that. But interestingly enough, Levi Matheny's first career start as a freshman came against the Wolverines, and that's a team that he watched Bethel Park beat in the semifinals the year that in 2008, the year they won the WPL championship, and lose to Woodland Hills in the semifinals in 2009, which I think is the last time Woodland Hills won a WPL championship. So there is some history between these two schools. The recent history is that the games have been close, but so is the not-so-recent history. And so I really expect this to be one of the top games of the night. And to be honest with you, if the game was still at Baldwin, it's been moved to West Mifflin, if the game was still Baldwin, there's a chance I'd be at that one.
Yeah. If you look at the eight teams left in Quad A, it's all the top seeds. And like we said before, if you look at that field, I think any one of them from that eight could be at Heinz Field. So I think it's a pretty solid group. And that's how close these rematches are. And even the one that isn't a rematch, Pine Richland, Mount Lebanon. Mount Lebanon played Woodland Hills tough a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I think they're legit too. So I think, after tonight we'll have a much better idea of who are the real title contenders.
Yeah, and the interesting thing there is I talked to Eric Kasparovich earlier this week about the Jerkovic brothers. Tommy caught his first touchdown pass from Phil last week in the playoff game, so it was kind of a nice moment for those two. But he said, the tough part about Mount Lebanon is that they played teams like Peters Township and Peters Township and North Hill is close. And then they played, you know, they were losing to Plum, they were losing to Bethel Park, and came back to win both of those games by double digits. He said they're really a hard team to figure out, because it's sometimes they play to the level of their opponents. And he said, yeah, and that's what scares me, is that, you know, they could be playing to, you know, Pine Ridgeland's level tonight, and this is a good second half team, a good fourth quarter team. So, you know, if there was an upset in this round that wouldn't surprise me, it would be Mount Lebanon over Pine Ridgeland, although I wouldn't go as far as to predict that. But I do think Mike Melnick told me before the season at WPXI Media Day at Heinz Field, that was back in mid-July, he said, we're going to have a good team. And he said it with confidence, not with, hey, I think we're going to be good. He said, we're going to have a good team. He's got a really good lineman up front of Villanova recruiting Paul Grattan. And he's got a dual threat quarterback at Eddie Jenkins, a receiver in Jack Young, who's averaging 31 yards a catch, and some other playmakers there who are very vital to their thing. And I think they're a scrappy, tough team that doesn't quit. And those type of teams are dangerous in the playoffs. Chris, any other games that I know you've seen? Central Valley, you've seen West Allegheny. When you look at the AAA playoffs, the AA playoffs, any other games that really kind of catch your eye tonight?
I mean, I think it was Thomas Jefferson, West Allegheny. That's just one of those classic matchups you've seen for the years. You know, the two teams are always good. I don't know if TJ has the team this year to match up with that West State team, but in name recognition, that's always a big matchup. But I think you might talk about it earlier, but I think the Avonworth and Clareton game is interesting. You know, that's a big Avonworth offense who pulled an upset in the playoffs last year by beating North Catholic, and I think it could be, you know, maybe the best team Clareton has seen outside maybe Jeanette. So I think that could be a pretty good matchup in single A tonight too.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing for Avonworth, is that they lost their star running back / wide receiver, Jamal Yulee.
Yeah.
They lost him at midseason. They lost also their top linebacker and leading tackler a week later. So, I mean, this is a team that has overcome some injuries. I think if not for those games they lost, those players, they also lost the games to Cardinal World North Catholic and Bishop Canavan back-to-back weeks. This is a team that could have been seeded much higher than ninth, could have been on the other side of the bracket, and that's a shame that Avonworth has to play them so early. But that's a nice intro for you to give me into our next segment, which is going to be the WPXI Skylight Spotlight, and my feature column for tomorrow is on Avonworth quarterback Zach Chandler, who has set all kinds of WPL passing records this season and has led the Lopes back to the playoffs, a guy who didn't really get to participate in the playoffs since his freshman year because of injury. So I want to thank you for joining us, Chris. It's a pleasure having you on every week, and we're looking forward to having you on here next week again to talk about the WPL semifinals. Thanks again, Chris.
Yeah, it's always good to join you, Kevin.
And speaking of that, we're going to take a break here in a second, but Chris mentioned the West Allegheny Thomas Jefferson. There's some schools that go way back with their regular season and playoff meetings, and I was talking to one of their assistant coaches, texting him today, John Dreger, who played for the Jaguars. Back in, you know, 2000 to 2002, and he was reminiscing about how his team hadn't lost to West Allegheny, and I remembered that he had a 99-yard interception return when TJ beat West Allegheny just days after the September 11th. I think they played on a Saturday night at West Allegheny's Joe McKayla Stadium, but it's interesting to kind of reminisce about those days. As soon as I said that to him, Dreger sends me a video of the play. So you know, some people still enjoy their past in those moments. Kind of reminds you of that Troy Aikman commercial. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to you want to just keep going? Josh Taylor tells me, just keep going. We're ready to go. We got the interviews loaded. Here we have Avonworth coach Duke Johncor. He's going to talk about Zach Chandler. He's also talk about this game with Clareton and about last year's playoff run. He's on, and then Zach Chandler follows, talking about his WPL record season, 21 yards from becoming the seventh player in WPL history to throw for 3,000, the only player in WPL history to have two 400-yard games in one season, and he broke Bruce Gradkowski's single-season WPL passing record this year. So check that out tonight on WPXI Skylights and in tomorrow's Trib and on the iPreps blog at blog.triblive.com/iPreps. Follow us tonight with the live blog. You can listen to the podcast of this show there. It's been a pleasure. Happy Friday, everyone, and enjoy your WPIL quarterfinal playoff games tonight. You're listening to the Kevin Gorman Show on Trib Live Radio. We're at Avonworth with
Loeb's coach, Duke John Corn. Coach, can you talk a little bit about what this season has been like? You guys make it, after making it to Heinz Field last year, here you are facing the same opponent, the Clareton Bears, in the WPL quarterfinals. How exciting has that been for you?
Oh, it's extremely exciting. We said all along, we'll play anybody, anywhere, at any time. I told the players that. We put ourselves in a position to be in the bottom half of a bracket, and you were facing the number one team, and we're excited about it. We've been talking all week about what a good opportunity it is.
How much did that experience serve this team this season, the experience of going to Heinz Field, of beating your rival North Catholic in the semifinals, and of just kind of getting to do some firsts and getting those things out of the system? How much did that, you know, serve as a motivator or maybe an inspiration for this team?
It was a huge stepping stone for our program. The kids were excited to get that taste and to have that desire to go back. That's been a focus all year long, you know. So they've had their sights set upon that, and this is the next step that we need to take to get on our road to Heinz again this year.
Last year, the last 2 years, you lost your starting quarterback to injury. This year you dealt with some injuries to some key players as well. Can you talk about how much that affected this season? When you talk about being in, you know, a certain part of the bracket, you know, things could have possibly even been better for you had you not lost some key guys.
Absolutely. I mean, injuries are part of the game, unfortunately. You know, from the NFL ranks to the college ranks. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's been out, James Conner at Pitt. And we've lost some key players for us this year, too. Jamal Hughley, one of our big playmakers, went down in week six. And he's one of those players that anytime he touched the football, he could score at will. So to lose him was a huge loss. And then in week seven, we lost a four-year starter in Matt Robabero. And he was a starting middle linebacker and starting guard, and his absence on the field is definitely noticed. We've had Kevin Simpson, a two-year starter. He was our running back, and he's been out most of the year as well. And we've had some key injuries, but that's par for the course for a lot of teams. You know, unfortunately, we've just had to deal with it, seems like, more often than not.
How has your team been able to overcome those injuries and persevere? I mean, you've had a little bit of experience in it, but at the same time, that kind of shows kind of the character of this program.
Well, the kids, you know, it's just next man in. You know, we talk about that all the time. You don't know when your number is going to be called. You don't know when your opportunity is going to arise. And we have a good group of receivers and a great quarterback. And, you know, they've just stepped in and filled in the gaps where necessary. And we've moved kids around. My one defensive player, Kurt Nicholas, you know, said, you know, I've played four or five different positions defensively. And I said, well, that's a testimony to your ability. You know, that we're confident that we can move you around and play in a lot of different positions. But it was necessary due to injuries at key positions.
You, speaking of the injuries, Zach Chandler, your quarterback, didn't play last year against Clareton. But a lot of these kids that are returning for Clareton did play against you. Kind of your thoughts on the Bears and some of the skill talent that they have back, most notably, you know, Lamont Wade, Aaron Matthews, Harrison Dreher, guys like that.
Well, that program has been a storied program. They've been successful for many, many years, and they've been at the top of single A for as long as I can remember, and they have some great athletes. And this is, I saw out to dinner last night at one of my former players, and we were talking about, you know, the year we played to Simon Green and Mike Weatherspoon and, you know, Eddie Ball and all the players that they've had in the past that are just great athletes, and this team is no different. I mean, they have some superstars, you know, Lamont Wade, Harrison Dreher, like you said. So it's a big, big, tall task for us to go down there and, you know, play our game and play to the best of our ability and, you know, go after them. So.
That said, they didn't see the same Avonworth team last year that they're going to see this year. You kind of went from a very pass-oriented team. Then when Zach went down, you ran the ball. You're back to being a very pass-oriented team. How much different of a team will they see on Friday night?
Well, they're going to see definitely a different team. You know, we were a more running team. Our quarterback last year was a slot receiver that was moved to quarterback, and he did a wonderful job. I mean, Zach's a pro-style quarterback that can throw the ball and has a great season. You know, broke the record from Gradkowski, which is a great accomplishment for him. So they're well coached. They're going to be prepared. They're going to have schemes in. They're going to have coverages in, and they're going to have a blitz package in that I'm sure is going to try and offset what we do. You know, they're not expecting a run game, so they're going to be prepared for a pass game.
How much of Zach's success, you know, it was kind of one of those things. You saw him start as a freshman, get off to a good start as a sophomore and junior before injuries ended his season. How much has this kind of answered that what-if question? Had he been healthy, how gratifying has it been to see him have this type of a senior year?
Well, I told him all along, you know, I mean, he threw for 1,100 yards as a freshman, and we grew together in that year. And then, unfortunately, his sophomore and junior years were cut short due to injury. And I knew all along, you know, going in, if he stayed healthy this year, he was going to have a a bang-up year. You know, he's had a great year and is continuing to have a great year, so I'm just excited for him and for his future, and he's done a wonderful job. So I can't say enough good things.
What are some things that really stand out about Zachis? I mean, obviously he has great size, but as far as him playing the position?
He's just competitive. You know, he wants to win. He wants to be that person for his teammates. You know, he said, "Coach, give me the ball. I want the ball in my hands." And that's the kind of competitor that you want. When push comes to shove, you want a player that wants the ball in his hands. And he makes the reads. He makes the throws. And he's just done a great job all year.
It's the Kevin Gorman Show on Triple Live Radio. We're here at Avonworth with Zach Chandler, senior quarterback. And Zach, last year at Heinz Field, you come out in the field out of the tunnel on a scooter. This year you play against Clairton in the WPL quarterfinals. How much of a different feeling and how much of a better feeling is that to actually know that you get a chance to play this time?
It's great. I haven't played in the playoffs since freshman year, and I only played one playoff game then, so it's a great feeling. Plus, watching our team play them against Clairton on Heinz Field, you know, they're a great team. You know, I think we're a great team, too. People were counting us out already, but, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow night.
When you got a chance to watch that game, was that a disappointing thing or was that an inspiring thing as far as your comeback from an injury?
I enjoyed it because I'm so happy for my teammates, but like then again, like I could have been me out there. Like I could have been out there helping my team, you know, when I was just in a scooter. But I was really happy that we made it. It was the first time we ever made it down the Heinz Field.
With, as you mentioned, playing as a freshman, you passed for 1,100 yards, made it to the playoffs. Your sophomore and junior seasons both ended in week three with season-ending injuries. How frustrating was that for you to have your high school career at that point cut short both times and you know, not really getting a chance to kind of show what you could do?
It was especially frustrating junior year because everything was clicking offensively to the third game. It was just some freak out-of-bounds accident. Everything was clicking. It felt really good. I had... You know, we were clicking on all levels.
And you had a broken fibula as a junior. That was something you knew when you got injured that it was all over, right?
Actually, I didn't know it was broken at first. It felt sprained or whatever. But then, yeah, I knew it was over after that doctor told me it was done. So, you know, that was real disappointing, especially after I just ended my season sophomore year. You know, it was a big letdown. But, you know, I came back and I worked really hard to get to this season.
How much of that was the motivation? Was that, hey, you had 2 years kind of stolen from you, and you only get four in high school career. How much of that was something that pushed you in the off season, made you work harder, and really made you kind of savor the senior year?
It really did, because I was thinking freshman year when I played, like, you know, I'm going to have a great 4 years. I'm playing now, but I got hurt 2 years in a row. I'm like, this is it. I'm going all in senior year, you know. This is all I have. I can't go back in time and fix anything. This is it.
We've talked about this, but you've kind of said, you know, after 1,100 yards as a freshman and 700 yards in seven quarters, the coach was saying last year that you knew you had a chance to do some special things given a full year. What was it like to answer that what-if question that probably was in the back of your mind all off season since you got hurt? What was it like to come out and have this type of year to answer that?
It was a great feeling because I knew I could do it. I just never got the opportunity because of injury. I knew I could go out there. I knew we could go out there and win games, you know. So I just wanted to prove to everyone that I could be a good leader and lead this team to victories. And, you know, it was nice breaking a record on the way. And
you broke several records. You first player in WPL history to have two 400-yard passing games. You also broke the single-season mark of Bruce Krakowski. And I think you broke the 10-game mark of his as well. Was that maybe more than you could have imagined, or is that what you imagined?
I go into the season with high goals, and I do everything to get to them. I wasn't going into the season thinking, oh, I'm going to break the record. I didn't even know what the record was in the beginning of the season. I just wanted to win, but, like, it is a great feeling. And, you know, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep winning games and go all the way to Whitfield in the States, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Where you were finally healthy for the entire season, you lost a couple of important teammates along the way. What was the key for Avonworth to keep playing as well as you have in light of losing, you know, a couple star players on your team?
Yeah, we lost our starting receiver and two starting receivers and a starting linebacker. It was big losses, but we just had to come together tighter. We had to, you know, look at it like you can't do anything about it. We got to play our game, and we got to, you know, we're going to adjust here and there because there were big holes to fill. But, you know, we came together, and we're in the second round of the playoffs. So,
is that something where you felt you could add some leadership to this team? Is Kevin, given that you've been through this, I mean, individually, personally, that you've been through on the other side of things, so that now that you're there, you can kind of guide this team through it?
Yeah, as a captain last year, I got hurt, and the other captains and I did also. We came together last year. The same thing with this year. We lost great leaders on our team. You know, so we came together really, really tightly and realized, like, you know, this is seniors. We got 20 seniors. This is the last go around. We can't let excuses bring us down. There's no excuse. You know, next person fill in.
You got to watch that game on the sideline last year against Clareton and saw how good some of their guys, especially in the secondary, are. What's that like for a guy like yourself who's gained a lot of notoriety with your passing ability and your records to have that challenge, to know you're going up against a defensive secondary that has some Division I athletes in it? How much do you look forward to that opportunity?
I really do look forward to it because most people look at Clareton and get afraid. You know, they got, you know, great players like Lamont Wade at corner. He's really great. But, you know, you can't be afraid going in. You got to attack them, you know, get them on their heels a little bit. And, you know, I'm going to go out there 100% full speed, and we're going to see what we can do. And there's, you know, we have nothing to lose, you know. We're not supposed to win this game, as anyone says, but, you know, we all believe that we can win this game, and it's good. I'm going to prove to people that, you know, it's not just against bad teams I'm good. I can play good against good teams also.
Yeah, I see some Beat the Bears signs in here. How much has that kind of been the rally cry, not just this week, but since Heinz Field last year?
Definitely. Our whole school, actually, we had like a little thing going today, and everyone had the signs, and everyone's behind us, and we're ready to go. That's just kind of our motto ever since conditioning camp. You know, we want to come back, and we knew we were going to get a chance to play them again eventually. So this is our chance, and we're going to go 100%.
And you also, I think, are 21 yards from the 3,000-yard mark. Only six players in WPL history have hit that. I don't know that any of them have ever hit it so fast through 11 games. You know, what's it like to know that there's a good chance of you adding one more accolade to a pretty special senior season?
It's pretty nice. I'm not going into the game like I'm going to get this. I want to win. But definitely that'll be pretty cool to look back on and, you know, help me for colleges and stuff like that, have another thing to put on my resume.
And speaking of colleges, what kind of interest are you getting? What kind of school are you looking for? Is there a certain type of offense that you want to play in?
I like spread kind of, but I'm not much of a big runner. But pro style for sure, and I definitely want to play college football. I don't know what level, but I don't have too much interest right now. But, you know, I'm assuming that might pick up after the season. We'll figure it out, though.
But it's got to be pretty special to have a senior year like this. I mean, how much are you kind of, I don't know if you're pinching yourself, but kind of thanking the gods, for the football gods, for the good health that you had, that you got to finally enjoy a full season like you have?
Yeah, it's been great. Honestly, like before the season, I knew I had to come in here and like be lights out, you know, to have college interest. And since I have been, it's a great feeling, you know, coming in, playing a full season. It's great.
All right. Thanks a lot, Zach. Best of luck to you.